Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, you have me puzzled. We are drinking what looks like orange soda pop. It tastes like, well, it looks like orange Smurf from that time you brought blue Gatorade after the Smurfs film. It tastes like Jarritos, if you ever get Jarritos at like Latin American restaurants. What are we drinking?
I had never gotten Jarritos. But
oh, it is Jarritos.
It is. But can you figure out what the connection is to our first movie of the night?
Well, let's see. The flavor of this Jarritos is Mandarin. Oh, very good. Because we're going to talk about four movies today. Hannah saw all four. I only saw three. Good job.
Oh, that's right.
But our first one is the widest release of the week for us. We didn't see the biggest release, which is the third and probably not final Planet of the Apes film. We're going to talk about Wish Upon. Wish Upon is the latest shock horror film, and the reason she picked Mandarin is because the killer inanimate object, which is a music box in Wish Upon, which will kill people but hook you up at the same time, it's written in ancient Chinese script. Hannah?
Yes?
The audience appeared to be of one mind after Wish Upon. What mind was that?
That was wishing the movie would finally be over, and then I think agreeing that it was really bad.
It was pretty bad. Like, horror movies in the summertime can be pretty good, like maybe Conjuring style. They can be campy, you know, you can kind of make fun of them. Or they could be, you know, satire, like Cabin in the Woods. But Wish Upon is one of those horror movies that is just terrible. It's a terrible, terrible film, and it's so terrible that it's high schoolers.
And yet teens may actually watch it and embrace it as sort of some ghost story, kind of sit around the campfire and talk about this movie kind of thing, as bad as it is. That's really the only crowd that I think might be interested in seeing this is the high school crowd.
Well, the girl we're watching, the female protagonist, and I'm going to get back to that why I say female protagonist, Claire Shannon, and she's played by Joey King. Joey King was one of the daughters in the Conjuring, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And she was the daughter in White House Down, which was, she actually was very good in that.
There is a connection to The Conjuring here. The director, John R. Leonetti, shot that film. He was the director of photography. This guy is a long-time Hollywood cinematographer, and he's only recently jumped over to directing. He directed Annabelle, which is a Conjuring spinoff. Mm-hmm. So our girl, Claire, she gets hold of this rather large music box, and she doesn't know what it does, but one day she just happens to... and coincidentally, she takes Chinese in high school.
Doesn't everyone.
So she puzzles out the words seven and wishes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those are the only words she could decipher with seven and wishes. She missed the other part of that little message there.
What we quickly figure out, and what all the supporting characters figure out, and what Claire just cannot grasp, is that every time she makes a wish, and it comes true, somebody dies. And they don't just die like they pass away in their sleep or have a heart attack. They die horrific, gruesome deaths. We're talking garbage disposals and antlers in the face.
Yeah. And it was like, how long does it take to put two and two together?
It took her five wishes
to figure that out. It took her five wishes to figure out that there was a blood price to be paid every time one of your wishes came true. And I'll tell you, for me, where this movie started out actually decent. Like, I thought, okay, this is going to be a kind of harmless Conjuring kind of movie. And I thought it was going to be okay. Where it lost me was when she suddenly, I think, I don't know if it was wish number four, but when she made the wish to be the most popular girl in school.
Love that wish, by the way.
That did it. I was like, I'm out. I'm done.
I was going to say, these are high school problems she's trying to solve, and she makes high school wishes. I want the cutest boy in school to fall in love with me. I want the bully to rot. I want to be the most popular girl in school. I want some money so I can buy fancy purses. These are high school wishes.
I want my dad to stop embarrassing me.
All right, she has a point there. And I want to bring up the dad because Ryan Phillippe. Ryan Phillippe is back. Mr. Cool Intentions himself. You should only have to tell your father one time, and he should never have to be told, do not dumpster dive in front of my high school. In fact, do not dumpster dive in front of my high school while all the kids are out front coming to school. It's like he does it to be, he has an intention to be cruel.
I don't think he does it to be cruel. I think he really just is like, oh, chill out. I think his whole vibe is like, yeah, you know, don't worry about it. There's good stuff to be found here. We're going to find it. How that whole dumpster diving thing even came about and what he did for a living.
Because he's sad. I don't want to give it away, but he's sad about something.
He's sad. But and for basically the idea, too, is that he found this music box for her while he was going through garbage. And that's how she comes into possession of it. And so then the duration of this movie is really about at what point, what does this mean? It's sort of like Aladdin is a horror story. It's like, okay, here, you can make your wishes.
But Aladdin was smart enough to realize wishes have consequences. Right. Be careful what you wish for.
And so this is a be careful what you wish for movie, but it just takes way too long. You're counting down those wishes.
And it's only 89 minutes.
I know.
It's not long.
By wish four, you're like, oh my gosh, there's still three more gruesome things that can happen here. And it was, yeah. And then, was it Jerry O'Donnell? Was
that Jerry O'Connell pops up.
Jerry O'Connell pops up for what, 5 seconds in this film?
It's a funny cameo.
It's a cameo.
You look at him like, that's Jerry O'Connell.
And so it's important to note the acting is fine. Like, I thought all the kids and the adults, their performances were fine.
Did you note it? I don't know if you ever watch on Netflix. You ever watch Stranger Things?
No, but I heard that
Shannon Purser's in it.
Yes.
Barb from Stranger Things pops up as one of the friends.
Yeah, and the other friend, Sydney Park, is Meredith. She was really good, too. So I kind of like the friends, except for the – you always have – and this happened in a couple of the other teen movies we've seen over the past year or so, where you have the girl going after the popular guy, but then there's this poor other schlub who really is pining after her, who is the better choice for her and the friend.
Straight similarity to Edge of 17.
Yes.
Because the good guy in both situations is Asian,
yeah,
by the way.
That's right. And so in this case, it's Ki Hong Lee is her friend Ryan, who she sort of engages to help her figure out what to do with this box. And since he's Asian, he's able to...
He just knows someone who knows.
He knows someone who knows someone, yeah. It's
ancient Chinese script.
Yeah.
And the other connection, which really ties it together at the ending, but I think it all connects with these female protagonists and their high school problems. And some movies are better than others at confronting it, hence Edge of 17, much better than this film. Mm-hmm. But the other connection is Before I Fall.
Yep.
Very similar film and very similar ending.
Yep. I felt like I'd just seen Before I Fall Redux, or Before I Fall with even a more horrific kind of twist throughout. But I think if I had to choose, I actually think Before I Fall was the slightly better film in its entirety, or maybe you put them on par. So I suppose if somebody really, really liked Before I Fall and they're in the mood for a summer horror flick, then Wish Upon might be the answer to your
prayers. I really did not like Before I Fall, but I liked it better than this.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one more person I want to bring up. We talked about Ryan Phillippe popping up as the dad here. Sherilyn Fenn. Sherilyn Fenn pops up as a neighbor woman.
Oh, right.
She was Audrey Horn in the original Twin Peaks series. It's like when I saw the name, it's like, ooh, Sherilyn Fenn. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway.
Wait, all right. So easy wrap up. Wishmon stinks. It's just terrible.
Yeah. Movie. It's pretty bad.
All right. Our second film, I did not see it. So Hannah's going to do the heavy lifting here, but I want to set her up. Some people walked out of this movie and said, this is the best movie of the year so far. I really liked it. It got a lot of buzz out of Sundance when it was at Sundance. And some people respond to those movies saying, what are you talking about? Did we see the same movie? Hannah, what camp are you in?
I am in the latter, the WTF camp of what did I just see. When I saw this film, it was a...
What film are we talking about?
I'm sorry. Because I forgot. Last week, we forgot to name one of our films. A Ghost Story is what this one is called. And it's by this director, David Lowery, who also did Ain't Them Bodies Saints. And it,
I like the movie.
And it reunites, I believe, Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara were in that one.
They were, yeah.
So he was bringing the old team back to play. And but this film is right up there with the Terrence Malick kind of movie.
And we know how much you love
Terrence Malick. And you know how
Terrence
much
Malick.
I love Terrence Malick, where I just go, I do not get it. I don't. I just, people came, so I saw this with about a dozen people at a theater, and I would say 10 of them really had no immediate response to the marketers who were asking about the film. Most of them were like, I'm still processing. And that's this kind of film. It's one where I need to process what I just saw before I can give you my feedback, because it's either brilliant or it sucks.
Mm.
And I kind of felt like it sucks, because it is...
Not so much of a fine line for you. You know what it
is. Not so much. It's... They call it a meditation on love and grief. And it's a meditation in that it's this ethereal ghost wandering through this house for years upon years, and people coming in and out of this house. And so Casey Affleck plays this one half of this car. And he is, it's not a spoiler, he's killed. Or he dies in a car accident. You don't even see it. You just sort of see him slumped over the wheel and you know he's dead. Next thing you know, he's in the morgue. He rises up with this Casper the Friendly Ghost looking sheet over him, like a Halloween costume. And he wanders back to his house in the, like this Texas farmhouse. And, watches as his wife, played by Rooney Mara, just kind of deals with her grief. And I don't know what
sounds
this...
Sounds like Ghost. Patrick Swayze's just hanging out watching Demi Moore.
I thought it would be. And I think people were hoping for that. And if you are a fan of Ghost and you think you're going to go into this film seeing, you know, a pottery scene with the Everly Brothers playing,
I'm not
in
asking
the
for the pottery scene.
You are not getting that. You are just getting this recently deceased, white-sheeted ghost returning to his home to console his wife, who doesn't know he's there. And then she leaves the house. She moves on. But he can't leave the house. So it's this whole weird thing about time and space and what happened in that house in the past, and different people come in and out of the house. And it's got these long silences throughout the film, and ambient sounds, birds chirping for 5 minutes. And there is a scene that everyone's talking about where Rooney Mara sits and eats a pie. It is one take. And she sits there on the kitchen floor for like what feels like 20 minutes and eats a pie. And that is this entire... It just goes and goes and goes.
Honestly, Hannah, this sounds like a movie I would really like.
So it could be. And perhaps you do need to see it, because it's not my thing at all. And I equate it with that, you know, Terrence Malick Knight of Cups, Tree of Life kind of thing, that for people who really embrace the auteur, the director who, you know, who's looking for this new plane to shoot on and to just bring something that is certainly different to the table and original, I guess. But
she just air quoted that, by the way. She air quoted original.
Air quoted original. So yeah, I hope you see it.
I think the wrong one of us saw this film.
Absolutely.
Just a hunch.
Absolutely.
Because I could see, I would describe this totally different. You'd be like, I don't know, this doesn't sound like my kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is. It's one of those, our friend John Armstrong, who's now in Seattle somewhere, I'm sure that he would have a lot to say about this film, because it really is trying to talk about the enormity of existence. And so I think
your voice gets all spacey when you describe the enormity of existence.
And so I think if you've got a philosophical bent in your movie, you know, if that's just the kind of film that you really enjoy, then
I
want to
see the pie scene.
And I'm telling you, you will.
So when I think of pie scenes, I think of Labor Day. You remember when Kate Winslet and Josh Brolin made that peach pie?
This is not that. Not at all. It's sitting on the floor, eating a pie with a fork.
I'm sure.
From beginning to end.
There's an artistic
from beginning
reason.
To end.
All right, our final two films are actually both documentaries. And the first one we'll talk about is City of Ghosts. City of Ghosts is one of the flood coming out of the Middle East right now. It's a companion piece, perhaps the one we talked about last week, Nowhere to Hide, which was about the male nurse trying to protect his family in the central desert of Iraq, running away from ISIS. It's also a companion piece to last year's Oscar documentary short winner, The White Helmets, the All ones right. where you had just citizen ambulance drivers and men taking infants out of crumbled buildings and saving their lives. This is right in there. City of Ghosts is about the RBSS. Rucka is being slaughtered silently. These are what you call citizen journalists. These were ordinary citizens before ISIS took over the city of Rucka in eastern Syria and declared it the capital of the caliphate. And what these guys did, the RBSS, started filming the atrocities because no one was talking about it. No news networks out there. Al Jazeera, CNN, no one was talking about what was going on in Rucka. So they started filming on their cell phones, and these horrific, gruesome images started to come out, and the word spread. Public executions, bullets to the head, decapitations, heads on spikes and poles. You see this. The director, he's taking some heat for this, and he's also taking some praise for this. So he shows it all. Sometimes he cuts away just before it happens. Sometimes he lets you see it. Sometimes he blurs that out. His name is Matthew Heineman. He was nominated for an Oscar 2 years ago for Cartel Land. It was in Mexico, about citizens standing up to some of the drug cartels. A lot of people liked that documentary better than I did. But City of Ghosts, I liked a lot better than Cartel Land. We follow some of these guys who they have to escape Rucka because they get found out. They go to Turkey. Some have to escape from Turkey because they get found out there, and they end up in Germany. So there's also this sub-theme of how Germany is at one time accepting refugees, just like men trying to show the world what's going on with ISIS. And we see people not accepting of refugees. There's images of the marches and saying, Arabs go home, go back to Turkey. You have a guy yelling at a microphone at a rally who sounds just like a guy in Rucka yelling at a microphone about the caliphate. It's very, I like how he put those images together. Were you affected by City of Ghosts as much as I think I was?
I don't think I was affected as much as you. I like the White Helmets documentary better. I thought it was a stronger narrative. This one, I felt went on to, even though it might not have been truly that long, it felt like it went on a bit long, and the characters were not as easily deciphered. Like, I was losing track of who was who, so that it was really hard to find that kind of affinity for these main characters the same way I did, for instance, last week in Nowhere to Hide, where it was, you know, this one person's story. It was easier to really follow his journey and to feel a little bit more for it. This one had moments that I thought were incredibly powerful when you realize the jeopardy that these citizen journalists knew that they were putting themselves in, because they felt it was so important to stand up to ISIS and to get the message out about what was happening in their hometown. And when you realize that while they sometimes fled, and there were, you know, some people that stayed in Rucka to document what they could, there was another group that left in order to take in all of the video and messages that were coming from inside and being outside of there in order to disseminate all of that information to the rest of the world. And they became targets for ISIS. And so when they couldn't be found because they had left for Turkey or Germany or wherever, one of the saddest things really was when you see what happened to the father and brother of one of these fighters, citizen journalists, that ISIS went after their family members who were still there when they had fled, and showed them the video of, like, the father's execution. And that kind of stuff was really powerful. The access that they had to that kind of footage was very powerful. But overall, in terms of the narrative structure of this film, I just couldn't get into it as much as I had with some of the similar documentaries that we've seen recently.
I think there's more of a structure in this film than Nowhere to Hide. Nowhere to Hide was pure raw footage. I had this camera for the past 3 years. Here you go, director. Have at it. This actually has, you know, the director's in the room, and probably not in Rucka, but in the other places, and Nowhere to Hide didn't have that. So it's also it's not really about the war either. It's really about a war of camera phones and a war of propaganda is what it turns out to be. And it's got a little bit more heavy hitters behind it. Alex Gibney, very famous name in documentaries. We've talked about him a number of times on the Cinema Clash. He was an executive producer here.
Okay.
And it was at Sundance. I think it won an award at Sundance. It was at AFI Docs. So a lot of people are talking about City of Ghosts. And I think there's a reason why.
Yeah, I do think it does not do it any favors that City of Ghosts and A Ghost Story are coming out at the same time, because there were even times where I was like, oh, wait, which film is this? Which one am I going to see? And I really was kind of getting them confused. I know they're for completely different – well, I don't even know if they're for different audiences. Not necessarily.
No, it's probably the same audience.
It's probably the same audience, which actually hurts it, I think, when you have the appeal. People are like, which movie am I going to see? So I think it's a very important story to tell, and it was framed the way I thought it was originally framed, and why I thought it should have ended before it did, is that it was bookended to some degree by the surviving members of this group of citizen journalists getting a, sort of a courage award from the Citizen to Protect Journalists. So they were basically being acknowledged for their bravery and for being putting themselves in harm's way in order to get this story out. And so I definitely admire the story they were telling. But what happened was when they went back to sort of the award ceremony, it then continued on beyond that. And I thought it was coming full circle, and they were kind of bringing it all together and were about to end it, and it didn't. And so I just kind of felt that some things just seemed a little interjected needlessly or tacked on, and there was just some scenes that I just thought went way longer than they needed to, with the greetings between all the buddies as they found each other again in different parts of the world and reunited to talk about where they were going with their mission. So I think it's another one of those ones that is worth seeing for the story and to acknowledge the danger these people put themselves in, and highlighting the dangers of ISIS beyond Syria, and how people kind of forgot that, you know, this was happening in this one town, this one city. And their claim is that, you know, if people had really paid attention and really cared, that they didn't care until suddenly the violence spilled over into Europe. And so I think that was a very important message to kind of see from that.
Before we move on to our last film, I want to talk about very briefly my favorite scene in City of Ghosts. They're walking in Berlin, and there's an accordion player playing Hava Nagila. And the Syrian, the Arab Syrian, gives the guy playing Hava Nagila some money.
Yeah, but he was like, give a half a franc. I'm like, I don't know how much a half a franc.
Well, he's walking away, and he's like, did I just give him 5 euro? Yeah. He's like, oh, no.
Yeah, so that part was very interesting to see the
That's globalization
shift.
Right there.
It is globalization, to see that shift in the in how refugees and people who were just exiled by what was happening in their hometowns, you just sort of... It gave you an appreciation for the refugee crisis and why it needs to be addressed.
All right, our final film is the new documentary from Errol Morris. Errol Morris is a very big name in documentary. He won an Academy Award in 2004 for The Fog of War, where he pointed a camera at former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara and said, explain yourself, sir. And he did, and he won an Academy Award for that. In 2013, he did the same thing to Rumsfeld in The Unknown Known. So now Errol Morris is back with the B-side, Elsa Dorfman's Portrait Photography. I'd never heard of Elsa Dorfman, and I guarantee you 99.9% of the people listening to this have never heard of Elsa Dorfman. It's an odd choice for Errol Morris. This man interviews secretaries of defense and has them explain themselves. He did Gates of Heaven. He did The Thin Blue Line. This guy's been around the block. And he profiles Elsa Dorfman, a lady whose medium turned out to be Polaroid film, but not the handheld snapshots Polaroid. We're talking 20 by 24 inch Polaroid portraits of families, and it's a very short film, 76 minutes. Hannah, why did Errol Morris create a documentary about Elsa Dorfman?
I have no idea, because to me, the B in the B-side, Elsa Dorfman's portrait photography, stood for boring. I just found this film to be... I did, but I found it to be incredibly boring. And I don't know why, because this does... I mean, I don't know why he chose her as a subject, because this does not rise to the level of A Fog of War, or, you know, the unknown knowns. It just doesn't. To me, I was kind of, I couldn't even tell. I didn't know who was directing it, but I almost felt like it was some family friend of hers who was just in her kitchen or, you know, just hanging out with her and getting her story. And it could have been anybody. And it could have been a home movie kind of put this together. And so she, I think... it must have had something to do with the fact that in her little Cambridge, Massachusetts studio, she captured, you know, aside from families, but like these beat poets and rock stars and notable people from Harvard. And she was really good friends with Allen Ginsberg. And when she finds out that he's died, you know, you see this portrait of Allen Ginsberg that is all of Allen Ginsberg.
And didn't know all of Allen Ginsberg was...
And who needs there to really see all of Allen Ginsberg?
It's about art, Hannah.
It's about art. But, yeah, so, I mean, she's a character. I think he probably said, oh my God, she's such a character, and she's got this treasure trove of these giant Polaroid portraits, because she's got this Boston accent.
It's pretty thick.
And it's very thick, and she's like, you know, this... She did it her way, and she, you know, knew what she wanted to do, and she did create a niche for herself that no one else ever really had. And so I think if you're into photography, if you've ever heard her name, or you're into documentaries about other forms of artistic expression, then maybe you'd get something out of this film. But for the majority of people, I just don't know why this rose to the level of something that that particular director would choose to do. It just was a very long 70 some odd minutes, because all you see is her standing there talking for the entire time.
I did not find this as boring as you did. I didn't find it riveting, but it kept me engaged. There are some sub-themes in here peeking out. I think one of them is changing technology. Mm-hmm. She liked Polaroid. Polaroid went away, and they stopped making the film. And I've seen a much better documentary about that already. It was from 2012. It was called Time Zero, The Last Year of Polaroid Film. It's a great documentary about the legions of Polaroid acolytes that were crushed when there became no more Polaroid. There's her history. She keeps saying, I'm a good Jewish girl. And back then... you got married is what you did, and I didn't get married, so what was I supposed to do? And oh, I became a photographer. Okay, all right, there's something there, but they don't explore that. Apparently she released a book that I guess some people in that circle are supposed to know. I did not know it. Elsa's House book, I guess, was famous in its time. Maybe that's why he made the movie about her. I don't know. Errol Morris is... he's taking a break?
I have to think there was some family or friend connection there. There just had to be. And in the end, this movie could have been a very interesting, tight 42-minute kind of thing. It could have been a really good short. When you're seeing these various photos, my favorite little vignettes were when some folk artist or something that she had photographed, where you actually hear their song playing and there's a montage of the photographs. That to me was the more enjoyable part of this particular documentary. I just think that it could have been better. And so I think by turning it into this 76-minute thing of just this woman standing there talking about her history of photography.
She answers the phone.
And answers, yeah.
It's Gail.
Yeah, she like, yeah, it's like, okay, you know, she's answering the phone like anybody else. Is it okay if I answer it? Sure, go ahead. I'm like, what, do we really need to see all of that? And so I think he was trying to showcase her character. And for sure, she is a character, but not a character deserving of a 76-minute documentary that had nobody else in it. Like, maybe if there had been some other people talking about her influence and how their photography influenced them, or why they posed, why they chose her to take their portraits this way with this interesting technology, then maybe it could be a longer film. But I wanted some of that. I wanted to care as to why this particular type of portrait was chosen by people and what it meant to them as opposed to just what it meant to her. And the other thing that I think is interesting to point out, and this apparently was part of her MO, was that she didn't care about capturing the soul of the subjects that she photographed. Her whole thing was, I captured the surface. And so she just was like, I want to show people as they really are. And that was not a capture your soul moment. It's, what are they like on the surface? What do people see on the surface? And so apparently that's her big shtick, was surface photography and portraits, and not capturing the soul of anyone.
I think we agree that if you're documentary shopping this weekend, shop for City of Ghosts and just leave the B-side.
For the B-side,
really. Only if you've already seen the A-side.
That's right.
And maybe if you haven't seen Nowhere to Hide yet, go pick that up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the B-side is Minor, Errol Morris. If you're a completist, I understand. You got to do what you got to do. I won't judge you. But if you choose the B-side over City of Ghosts, then I will judge you.
Yes, as will I.
All right. This is a quicker Cinema Clash. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Just a very quick recap. Wish Upon is kind of like the horror movie version of the B-side.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for if you think you want to go see this one.
I can't believe some people need to learn that lesson. Be careful what you wish
for.
That's
right.
Ghost Story?
If you like Terrence Malick type of films, and if you like the very esoteric, philosophical-minded film, maybe.
City of Ghosts was outstanding.
It's good. I did like the White Helmets movies and the... And last week's Nowhere to Hide slightly better, but I can't fault anyone who might want to actually go learn something and see City of Ghosts.
The B-side, Elsa Dorfman's portrait photography. No.
If you know Elsa, absolutely.
Elsa's go friend Gail is going to go see this.
I think you should go get some popcorn, watch Elsa. And if you haven't heard of Elsa Dorfman, then I say, don't bother.
Next week, you have to do the whole Cinema Clash in that voice.
Okay.
All right. On behalf of the Cinema Clash, I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.